I never said to anybody that I was America's father.
From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Cosby Unraveled. I'm Annette John Hall. In this hour, we'll take a hard look at the legacy of a kid who grew up in North Philadelphia and became a cultural icon, a public moralist, and accused sexual predator.
We are here to announce charges that have just been filed against William Henry Cosby.
More than 60 women have accused Cosby of sexual assault, and he will face one victim in a trial that begins on Monday.
If he gave women drugs without their knowledge and consent, that would be a criminal act.
Maybe you've already made up your mind about Cosby, but for some, it's not that easy.
I do not believe it. Everybody wanted to get Cosby for money.
A jury will weigh the evidence and will ask, what's justice? Coming up after the news. It's 2002.
William Henry Cosby, Jr.
Bill Cosby is getting the Medal of Freedom from President George W. Bush. Other honorees that day include Nancy Reagan, Hammering Hank Aaron, and Mr. Rogers.
As a gifted comedian.
The comedian stands to accept the award, and everyone laughs.
As a gifted comedian, actor, and author, Bill Cosby has entertained millions around the world.
Cosby
with his wit,
is so loved that even without speaking, with just a look, people are laughing.
He opened doors for succeeding generations of outstanding black artists while serving as an inspiration to all. From television to film.
Then, as if Cosby wrote the bit himself, the president fumbles and can't get the medal fastened around Cosby's neck. It's awkward. It's funny. America's goofy dad. And we were all in on the joke, right? Weren't we?
I never said to anybody that I was America's father.
But America certainly saw him that way. From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Cosby Unraveled. I'm Annette John Hall. 2002 seems like a long time ago now, doesn't it? On June 5th, Bill Cosby will face felony charges for aggravated indecent assault, and there are dozens of alleged victims.
And from the first sip and then the second sip, I knew I had been drugged.
I woke up out of a very confused state.
My speech was slurred.
Until two sips.
Not in my clothes.
I
was woozy.
Naked, bruised, and
battered.
I wanted
the police to be able to just confront him and let him know that I know he did something wrong.
Bill Cosby is accused of drugging and sexually assaulting Andrea Constant in 2004. She is the only accuser whose claims have led to criminal charges. Cosby's 79 years old, and if he's convicted, he could spend the next decade in prison. For all of us who watched his career and laughed with him, it's difficult to square the allegations against the celebrity we thought we knew.
Philadelphia? I always talk about Philadelphia. If it's in my records, if it's in my monologues, it's important to me because that's the connection. Philadelphia.
So that's where we started. We're walking through Richard Allen Holmes, a housing project in North Philadelphia. We're looking for the house Bill Cosby grew up in.
920, 922.
Would it be across the street? A wrought iron fence?
They don't look like what you'd imagine. They look like suburban townhouses.
Across the street is the newer housing.
I'm imagining that the when he was here, the homes looked like this.
Yeah.
We lived in the projects. Two-bedroom apartment in the projects with beautiful linoleum floors.
The house is gone, but this is the place where Cosby spent most of his childhood. We talked to the people here. Over the years, Richard Allen has gone through its ups and downs, but we heard a lot about pride, planting flowers and neighborhood kids playing in the street. We also heard stories about gunshots and sirens. The people we spoke to had mixed feelings about the charges, but everyone here claimed Cosby as one of their own.
I am Lynn.
I'm Mary.
Nice to meet you.
You
too. Okay.
So you remember him from his comedy?
Mary Jefferson is 72 and Lynn Hercules is 56. They both have lived in the Richard Allen homes for a long time. And pretty much like everybody else in the 80s, they were fans of The Cosby Show.
I loved the show.
Why?
He was more like a father to the children.
Yeah.
A down-to-earth father, yeah.
When you heard the accusations of all these women...
When I heard that, I called him a dirty bastard. I didn't know all the facts or anything.
Yeah.
But,
what do you think now, though?
It's two sides to every story.
Yeah.
But if it was my daughter and she came to me, I'm going to have to believe her.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to believe her.
While Bill Cosby has come a long way from the Richard Allen homes, you can see its influence is all over his work. Those unforgettable cartoon characters weren't just made up by Cosby. They were based on his real friends. Mushmouth, Old Weird Harold. Imagine young Cosby and his friend Albert Robertson, the model for Fat Albert, walking down the street cracking each other up. Cosby always knew he could make people laugh. He considered a career in comedy, but this was the 1950s, and those times weren't very kind to black folks.
People would say, you know, you're funny. You ought to be on the Ed Sullivan Show. And my answer to them was, right, just walk right up. I think a part of what kept me from really taking it seriously was because you're looking at the 50s and the 60s, And you're looking at no Negroes wanted here.
That was Cosby on WHYY's Fresh Air in 1991. Cosby wasn't much of a student. He flunked out of Central High School, which was one of the city's best public high schools. But after a stint in the Navy, he went to Temple University on a football, track, and basketball scholarship.
I think the commitment came when I had all of my academic world set, my athletic world set, and then this show business world. I could toy around with that and not be super, super serious about entering the area.
But for a man born to entertain, his passion for comedy couldn't stay on the back burner. Michael Eric Dyson is a cultural critic and author.
Over all these years, no matter what he did, what was constant was Bill Cosby would take to a microphone, man, chair, microphone, and just blow audiences away with his extraordinary comedic genius.
Cosby first became famous through stand-up comedy in the 1960s. He won his first of 9 Grammy Awards for his 1965 album, I Started Out as a Child. Routines like Half Man showcase the sometimes silly observational humor that would become his trademark.
Wolfman, right? And here's a guy that I sympathize with because he can never remember his rhythm pattern. He's walking around as a normal human being, then the moon comes up on it. You know, now, a guy like that has got to be embarrassing to his friends.
That sounds tame by today's standards, but even 50 years ago, that was the point. His comedy was clean, family-friendly. And maybe the most remarkable thing was that for a black man from inner city Philadelphia who came up in the projects, his comedy made no mention of race.
Early on, he determined not to use race as a comedic crutch. And he wanted to tell stories that were race neutral and that applied to the American situation, to the human condition.
Cosby's style was in stark contrast to other black comedians of the time like Moms Mabley and Red Fox, who geared their comedy to black audiences, and Dick Gregory, who used his comedy as a sharp social critique against racism.
Well, see, back in my hometown, they make us take a test to vote. Nuclear physics and Russian. And And if you pass the test to tell your bar you can't vote, you read Russian, you must be communist.
Dick Gregory was a guy who was, using race as a searing metaphor for American culture and using it to develop his ideas about how we could overcome America's original sin. But Bill Cosby was determined not to be beholden to that. So Bill Cosby developed a style all his own.
In a 1969 interview in Playboy magazine, Cosby explained why he didn't push civil rights issues in his comedy. He said, "The fact that I'm not trying to win converts on stage bugs some people, but I don't think an entertainer can win converts. I've never known any kind of white bigot to pay to see a black man unless the black man was being hung. So I don't spend my hours worrying how to slip a social message into my act. I just go out and do my thing." That didn't mean Cosby was unaware of racial tensions in America. The 1960s were the height of the civil rights struggle. In 1965, the year he won his first Grammy, what the media dubbed racial unrest was on the news almost every night.
"We're going to walk together. We're going to stand together. We're going to sing together. We're going to stay together. We're going to moan together. We're going to groan together. And after a while, we'll say, freedom, freedom, freedom now!"
Protesters marching for voting rights were attacked and beaten on the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama. Watts burned. Malcolm X was assassinated in New York. If you were black in America, it was impossible not to have experienced racism. Cosby had experienced racism while breaking into comedy. He talked about it in a 1991 interview on Fresh Air.
"There was really no place that had a sign saying that Negroes could come here and do stand-up comedy."
In 1965, Cosby was the first African-American to star on a dramatic television series, I Spy. He made sure the series writers were on board with creating a black character that broke the mold.
"I certainly was not going to be a black joke, and I certainly was not going to be afraid of ghosts."
Cosby knew he would have to be diligent to avoid comedy stereotypes, and he was serious.
"I had done a show prior to I Spy called That Was the Week That Was, and it was comedy, and I was the only Negro on the program. And some of the scripts that came through, I never did some of those routines because the jokes were always about my color. And I said to the writers, I'm not doing it. So finally, one of the writers came out and said, why aren't you doing these jokes? I said, well, these jokes are all about, they're on me and they're about my color. And you guys are not writing anything to counter. I don't counter this person's statement to me. And if it is funny, then why can't I say this about the white guy?"
His keen awareness of how the black image could be manipulated made him careful about his roles. It also made him a supporter of civil rights issues offstage. Again, Michael Eric Dyson.
"Privately, he was always raising money for great causes and speaking to the need for civil rights and the like. His very appeal to a race-neutral humanity had its own weight, its own moral composure, its own ethical composition."
Coming up next, Bill Cosby redefines the sitcom for a new generation. Welcome back to Cosby Unraveled. I'm Annette John Hall. In making the decision not to play the comedic race card, Cosby had a huge effect on how white America saw black people and how black people saw themselves with the introduction of the Huxtables in the 1980s.
"Theo?
Yo!
Son, your mother asked me to come up here and kill you."
Again, Michael Eric Dyson.
In 1984, He, of course, revolutionized the sitcom, not just black sitcoms. He saved the sitcom. He saved NBC. He saved American television, became one of the most popular shows in the history of the medium, and revolutionized American consciousness about the black middle class.
The Cosby Show did not revolve around the upper middle class African-American family wrestling with issues of race. The themes could have fit any family sitcom, from Ozzie and Harriet to the Brady Bunch. Mom being the one in charge, first kisses, first jobs, and first cars.
I hope you are ready for this, because Denise has some news for you.
Got my driver's license. Yeah. That's my test. Yeah.
I want to talk to you about something.
You can't borrow my car.
Airing on NBC from 1984 until 1992, The Cosby Show was relentlessly positive and wildly popular. Every Thursday night, America, but specifically Black America, got a chance to see a Black family that we could all relate to.
It was amazing. I mean, I was like completely like, who are these people?
Salome Shatilid is a professor of Africana Studies at the University of Pennsylvania. She was about 8 years old when she first saw the show, and she loved how it was filled with cultural references to Black art and artists, to the jazz that Bill Cosby loved, and to the historic Black colleges and universities that he supported.
Just the ways in which he was able to show the complexity of African-American identity, the show was trying to embrace and celebrate certain aspects of African-American musical culture and visual culture. As a kid, it was extraordinary to see that on the small screen.
The Cosby Show is probably the most significant sort of entertainment impact that Bill Cosby had on my life.
Dr. James Peterson is the head of Africana Studies at Lehigh University and host of the WHYY podcast, The Remix.
The narrative of Black fatherhood for most of my life has been one of Black fathers being absent from the family. Black fathers not being engaged with their children, not being good providers, that Black fathers doing what they're supposed to do was an exception, not the rule. And so Cosby's embrace of Black fatherhood was relatively unique in terms of Black comedic performance and Black comedic expression at the time.
If you were Black and middle class, you saw yourself reflected. If you were upwardly mobile, you saw the payoff of your aspirations. Coming in a career that contained a long list of firsts, the show confirmed Cosby's status as a true pioneer for Black America. Comedian Dave Chappelle paid tribute in a 2017 Netflix special.
I remember that he's the first Black man to ever win an Emmy in television. I also remember that he's the first guy to make a cartoon with Black characters where their lips and noses were drawn proportionally. I remember that he had a television show that got numbers equivalent to the Super Bowl every Thursday night. And I remember that he partnered up with a clinical psychologist to make sure that there was not one negative image of African Americans on his show. I'm telling you, this is no small thing. I've had a television show. I wouldn't have done that.
America's love affair with the Huxtables reaffirmed Cosby's popularity. Reruns kept the characters alive long after the show ended. And the spinoff, A Different World, followed daughter Denise, played by Lisa Bonet, to college.
Hello?
Daddy!
Who's this?
Dad?
Are you flunking everything?
Dad!
Are you in jail?
No! I'm just calling to say hi.
Swear.
Yes!
Hey, Denise!
But in 2004, the image of Cosby as Cliff Huxtable, the fun-loving, cool dad, slid away.
People getting shot in the back of the head over a piece of pound cake. And then we all run out and we're outraged. Oh, the cops shouldn't have shot him. The hell was he doing with the pound cake in his hand?
Cosby delivered a speech at an NAACP event commemorating the 50th anniversary of Brown versus the Board of Education. It became known as the pound cake speech.
I'm talking about these people who cry when their son is standing there in an orange suit. Where were you when he was 2? Where were you when he was 12? Where were you when he was 18 And how come you don't know he had a pistol?
He scolded and criticized poor urban blacks for not speaking correctly, not raising their children properly, and squandering everything early civil rights activists had fought for.
When I think about the pound cake speech, what stood out to me was its striking venom toward, you know, poor, black, vulnerable people.
Michael Eric Dyson critiqued the speech in his 2005 book, Is Bill Cosby Right, or Has the Black Middle Class Lost Its Mind?
There's a big shift between Cosby before the speech and Cosby after. Cosby before the speech, beloved icon who embraced all of America, who had nothing or little to say about race in his comedic act, although privately he gave to black causes. Afterward, a withering indictment of poor black people in America, he became known as a public moralist.
Cosby didn't stop with a single speech. He toured the country speaking to black community groups in what he described as call-outs.
There's more to come on the Bill Cosby call-out.
What's your son writing on the walls? Look at his magazines. What's he reading? What's he saying? Because there may be a gun hidden somewhere.
It's not just a pick yourself by your bootstrap speech to African Americans.
Again, Salamisha Tillett.
But he spends a lot of time like vilifying and demonizing and caricaturizing like African American people, working class people, but particularly black women.
Not everyone was angered by the call-outs.
He was so real. I mean, Bill was like that.
For Bilal Qayyum, an activist in Philadelphia, Cosby was deeply committed to the city's black community, and Qayyum worked with him.
I set up a series of forums, small discussions, 20, 30 women, with Bill Cosby. And we did 5 public housing units, and the discussion was great. He talked about the personal responsibility issue, and he also was very sympathetic about their conditions, how they lived, maybe 150, 160 women and myself and Bill Cosby.
But he and Cosby didn't always see eye to eye.
I really believe that our condition, when I say ours, in particular about African-American community, is driven by white institutional racism over the years. And he understood that, but didn't believe that that was a reason why we shouldn't shake it off and move on. So we would have debates about that.
But Qayyum felt like he and Cosby were on the same team and shared the same mission.
I sense a genuine commitment that what he was doing and speaking out about issues around, particularly the African American community, that he was serious about it. And some of them were very controversial positions. No other entertainer came and walked the streets with us, went door to door, talking to folks. Dr. Cosby.
Qayyum says much of the good work Cosby did has been lost in the sexual assault allegations.
How do you convict a man before he has a trial? And I think that America has basically convicted him before he has a trial. I mean, they stripped him of everything. I mean, all of his money that he donated to black colleges and all that great stuff he's done.
There's no consensus of opinion in the black community on the charges against Cosby. Even for the people in the neighborhood where the entertainer grew up, the Richard Allen Homes in North Philadelphia, opinions differ from block to block.
Now that people coming forward saying that he did this and did that, all I'm saying is why wait so long to do something about something?
Andrea Adams.
If he did something, why didn't you address that back then? Why you gonna do it now? That's all I'm saying.
And Barry Williams.
You know, it's like, why? Doesn't make any sense. You know? You wonder, is he sick? Like, is there some type of mental illness going on there to think that it's all right to drug women, then force yourself on them? It's like you got to wonder about a person's mental health.
Bilal Qayyum and Michael Eric Dyson may disagree on Cosby's approach to the problems of the black community, but they do agree that what happened to Cosby is not just about being accused of a crime, it's about race.
There's always a double standard in America when it's black folks and white folks. I mean, there's case after case after case after case.
And Michael Eric Dyson.
Whatever Bill Cosby has done that is legally reprehensible and morally offensive, he should be held to account. But we can't deny that there's a racial element to it as well.
Compared to cases like Woody Allen and Roman Polanski, it's hard for many African Americans to not see race at play. Bill Cosby's daughters recently spoke out publicly about their father on the New York radio show The Breakfast Club. His daughter Erin pointed to a long history of legal injustice to blacks.
I cannot understand how our society has permitted my father to be condemned so unjustly and cruelly in the court of public opinion without evidence or proof and with no verdict or judgment. Like the cruel history of our people, the legal system and the protections of the law do not seem to exist for him today.
James Peterson.
Yes, people still love Woody Allen movies and will go see Woody Allen movies. Roman Polanski, same thing, to a lesser extent, because he's been ostracized in some ways. But the reality is those are white men. And in the system that we're in, white men enjoy privileges that black men will never enjoy. I don't think it's a privilege to be able to assault women, but they enjoy the legal privilege of being considered innocent until proven guilty. That's unfortunate, but that's how race operates in America.
Coming up next, we examine the allegations against Bill Cosby and reactions from his friends. Welcome back to Cosby Unraveled. I'm Annette John Hall. Back when Cosby got his start telling jokes at a bar in Philadelphia, he met jazz saxophonist Jimmy Heath, who was playing at the club where Cosby worked.
We had nicknames for each other. I used to call him North Philly Billy. He called me South Philly Shorty.
Cosby booked Heath and his brothers as the opening act to his comedy gigs and featured them on The Cosby Show in the 80s. When Jimmy Heath received the NEA Jazz Masters Award in 2003, Cosby had custom suits made for him.
So he says, give this guy your size and everything. And he had me three outfits, three suits, and I had never had any special tailor-made outfits like Mr. Cosby bought me at that time. So that's something I always remember, because I had never had no $2,000 suits.
Jimmy Heath, his friend of 57 years, stands with him, despite more than 60 women coming forward to accuse Cosby of sexual assault.
He was a good guy, and is a good guy in my book forever. My reaction is then and now. I don't believe it. I do not believe it. Everybody wanted to get Cos for money.
Cosby loved jazz, and he supported jazz musicians throughout his career.
Yeah, I got five.
Take five? Can we take five?
Hey, this is my band. They leave when I'm ready to leave.
We ran into Philadelphia native and jazz bassist Christian McBride in the hallway of public radio WBGO in Newark. McBride is a jazz virtuoso. He's won 5 Grammys, so he's a pretty big deal.
What can I tell you about Dr. C?
We didn't have an appointment, but when he heard we were doing a story about Cosby, he made time to talk to us.
Growing up in Philadelphia, particularly in the mid, late 70s and through the 80s, he was as important to young Philadelphians as, say, like Babe Ruth was to baseball. We had almost every Bill Cosby record. I think I know every word on all of those albums like the back of my hand.
He got to know his childhood hero, and through jazz, they became friends. McBride told us his favorite story about the time they were backstage in a dressing room at a sold-out concert at the Kennedy Center in D.C. Cosby had some Cuban cigars and wanted to light up, and he wasn't about to let some stupid fire code stop him.
2 Cuban cigars fired up backstage at the Kennedy Center. I'm thinking every fire alarm in this place is going to go off. They're going to shut the show down. We're all going to get arrested. And so I'm scared. I'm like, I don't think now is a good time. And he's like, let's smoke it. Hush. It's like, all right. He lights me up. He lights his up. And we're sitting back in the dressing room chilling. Got our feet up about 20 seconds, you know, maybe a minute. Mr. Cosby runs to the door. He said, yeah. Oh, my God. You can't smoke here. The smoke is billowing all into the audience. You guys got to put that out. Bill Cosby says, why? He's a Cuban.
And how does Christian McBride reconcile these allegations against Bill Cosby?
It's deeply disappointing. I am personally as stumped as everyone else. I think it's something that all of us are struggling with. But you just can't wash away the inspiration and the happiness and the laughs. You can't erase all that. You know, it's part of our DNA.
He was a hometown boy who grew up here and made good.
Wilson Good became the first black mayor of Philadelphia in the mid-80s. At the same time, The Cosby Show was a perennial number one in the ratings. During Good's campaign, Cosby hosted a fundraiser for him.
He was always a big cheerleader of me, a big cheerleader for the city, and a big supporter of the city throughout.
He used his influence to get money for the city's sports and recreation programs. For many years, he was a mainstay at the Penn Relays, the oldest track and field event in the country. That's where he ran against Wilson Good in a senior division race.
I was running the anchor leg and took the baton. Bill Cosby grabbed me and said, "Wait, why don't you wait for me to get my baton? And then why don't we just jog down and I will let you tip in front of me and still win." And so I fell for it, and he got the baton and took off. He tricked me.
Cosby wore Philadelphia on his chest. He'd wear T-shirts from Temple University, from Lincoln, from Cheney. On his show, he was always eating hoagies, Cliff Huxtable's favorite sandwich.
First, we have healthy rice cakes. We don't want any, okay? Now we have something else Mrs. Huxtable would like us to eat to live longer and drink apple juice. Throw that out, too, okay? Now here we have a giant hoagie. It's full of preservatives and additives, and you may not live as long. Let's try it, okay?
Good and Cosby are the same age. He understands the obstacles the comedian faced and the importance of his achievements.
I grew up in the segregated South, where African Americans were denied basic and fundamental rights. And to see Bill Cosby rise to fame in the 1960s and in the 1970s just made me absolutely proud. The likelihood of seeing a black man on television was as remote as seeing a black man in the White House.
All of Cosby's friends that we spoke to struggled to accept the charges against him and to think of the man they knew as a sexual predator.
My reaction was another hero have been pushed down or brought down, and we so often remember the bad and not the good.
The fans we spoke to expressed confusion and something close to grief.
Hello, are you Katya?
Hi, Katya.
Hi, Lindsay Lizarski. Hey,
Lindsay.
Nice to meet you.
Cool, come on in.
Catalina said you had some old records.
Oh, you've got a lot of old records.
Yeah,
they're in the back here.
Like many people, Katya Gorka remembers growing up and watching The Cosby Show. As an immigrant kid in Boston, she wanted to be part of the Huxtable family.
They're all charming in their own way, like even Vanessa.
She now lives near Temple University, where she studied film, the same university Bill Cosby attended. Our producer, Lindsay Lizarski, stopped by as she was paring down her old record collection.
I can't look at him anymore. I can't see these records, and I can't see Bill Cosby's face as this innocent comic anymore. It's painfully ironic. I mean, look at these titles. Revenge, Two Daughters, Two Brothers, The Tank, Smoking. Should we play something called Wives? To be honest, like, most of them are, you know, fairly unlistenable. Like, the records are not, they're not actually that funny.
Do you find yourself laughing to the stories or anything like that?
No, I kind of like, I have like one of those kind of question marks floating over your head when you're listening to something like, should I be laughing now?
What is it in the makeup of a married woman? Because they are two different people, a single woman and a married woman. Single woman is hungry. She's out there trying, please, somebody, let me have a man somewhere, I'll do anything. I'll dress on time. I'll cook for you. I'll sew. I'll let you gamble. I won't bother you. And I'll do all these things. And then when you get married, all right, Herman, we got you.
So what are your thoughts when you listen to that?
Wow, everything's kind of wrapped up with the controversy a little bit. Like, you kind of... And also the moment that we live in, really. I'd like to think we're a little bit more empowered. Women who maybe don't think that's so funny.
Mary Claire Dale has to be about the only person who didn't watch The Cosby Show.
I really don't have a dog in this fight because in the sense that I lived away during the years and didn't have a TV during the years that his show was on. So
Have a TV?
Right. It was my 20s.
Dale is a reporter for the Associated Press. For most of her 30-year career in journalism, she's covered the courts.
So I was here at the AP in 2005 when Andrea Constant first went to police in Montgomery County.
Andrea Constant met Bill Cosby while working for the Temple women's basketball team. She saw him as a mentor, somebody she'd go to for career advice. They met on several occasions, and twice she turned down his advances. In 2005, she told police that Cosby had drugged and sexually assaulted her. When the district attorney at the time declined to press criminal charges, she filed a civil suit. Cosby gave a deposition, under oath, where he spent 4 days answering questions from investigators. And that's what makes Constance's case different. Again, Mary Claire Dale.
Well, 10 years later, when more and more women were coming forward and the debate over Cosby's behavior was very much in the news, it was frustrating to me and probably to a lot of people because I felt like there was just a lot of noise. Scores of women saying that they had been drugged and molested, and Cosby's agents either overtly or covertly saying that they were liars or gold diggers. And I remembered that the only time he had ever given a deposition about his sexual conduct was here in Philadelphia in the courthouse that I covered. And so I said, we've got to see what we can do to try to get that.
In 2015, Dale and attorneys for the Associated Press filed a motion to unseal the deposition.
I just felt like that would add information to the debate over his legacy, if you will, and his behavior. So we petitioned the judge, and we had oral arguments with Cosby's lawyers. The judge said that, you know, Cosby's public moralizing about things had made him a public figure and diminished his right to privacy over matters that his lawyer said would be embarrassing for the star. And the judge said that embarrassment was not enough to warrant that the item still be sealed.
The judge gave Dale access to the testimony and made the deposition public. Cosby's testimony painted a very different picture from his family-friendly image.
I would say sex and drugs are the two big highlights.
Rock and roll? No rock and roll.
Yeah, I don't recall. There was some jazz, I think. I don't recall any rock and roll. The Quaaludes, of course, was a big bold-faced word that stuck out to us and that we ran with. And that involved him saying that back in the 70s, he had obtained prescriptions for Quaaludes, kind of as a party drug, to give to women that he was interested in having sex with.
For those too young to remember, Quaaludes are depressants. They cause drowsiness and reduced heart rate.
He acknowledged under oath over many decades of behavior, which involved inviting very young actresses from teenage years through 30 or what have you to his townhouse, apartment, bungalow, hotel room to engage in quote-unquote acting lessons, often which involved a drunken scene where the woman had to be drunk or act drunk.
Cosby said he liked to stay sober, but admitted he would encourage others to drink. At the center of the trial, the night in question occurred in early 2004. Cosby invited Andrea Constant to a suburban Philadelphia home. Constant said he offered her some wine, and what he said were herbal pills for stress. According to police reports, Cosby told her the pills would make her feel good, take the edge off, and he placed them in her hands and he said, "Take the water, and then taste the wine." When Constance said she didn't want to drink on an empty stomach, Cosby told her again, "Just taste the wine." She took a few sips.
And then they're sort of on the couch together, quote-unquote spooning or such, and the way that she alleges she was moving in and out of consciousness, semi-conscious, drugged, in a stupor, unable to really shout out or stop him, etc. And his hands are there, and he's putting his hand down her pants, and he says, "I am not stopped." It was somewhere between permission and rejection.
Cosby told investigators that Constant never told him to stop, never pushed him away. He described it as consensual.
The main evidence in the case will be the testimony of Andrea Constant.
Deborah Turkheimer is a law professor at Northwestern University and a former prosecutor who's handled sex crimes.
So according to the complaint, and I expect this will be similar to the testimony on the stand, she, shortly after consuming the drugs and alcohol, experienced legs that became rubbery and like jelly. Her vision became blurry. She felt nauseous. She was in and out. And while she was frozen and paralyzed, unable to move or speak, Cosby digitally penetrated her and fondled her breasts.
When she woke up early the next morning, her bra was undone, her clothes disheveled. Cosby gave her a muffin and walked her to the door. She left without saying a word. On December 30th, 2015, more than 10 years after that night in question, Cosby was charged with 3 counts of aggravated indecent sexual assault. The charges were filed just 2 days before the statute of limitations on the case were up. The deposition that Dale fought to have unsealed led to the first criminal charges against Cosby.
It just came down to the fact that I felt like we weren't really getting any clarity on the situation, even as more and more women came forward and more maybe cable TV debates were being held about it. It was still just a he said, she said thing. And I think, you know, it's still to be determined whether or not Cosby is guilty of a crime. A jury will determine that. But I think the deposition did reveal just what his conduct and almost his attitude toward women was. And then when you see what happens behind the scenes, I think it's like a little bit crushing for all of us.
I think my first reaction, I was just sort of in shell shock, relieved, elated. When I saw the mugshot, I started to cry. It just hit me so hard, and I really didn't anticipate that I was going to react that way, but I did.
That's Victoria Valentino being interviewed on CNN. She says she was drugged and raped by Cosby in 1969. Her allegations, like almost all of the rest, fall outside of the statute of limitations. When Andrea Constant first came forward in 2005, the Montgomery County DA said the year-long delay was one of the reasons he decided not to prosecute. He suggested the delay raised questions about Constant's credibility.
It's very difficult to get a case prosecuted.
Salome Shatila teaches at the University of Pennsylvania. She's also co-founder of A Long Walk Home, a nonprofit that pushes an end to violence against girls and women. Only 16% of all rapes ever get reported to police. So to Tillett, the fact that Cosby has even been charged and is going to trial seems like a miracle.
So given statute of limitations, given the fact that the victim was drugged, given the fact that she came forward a year later, there are a lot of things that very rarely work in the victim's favor. So it's already working against you. So then take into account all the other factors. What obviously made it possible was the massive amount of women coming forward and saying, this too happened to me.
Tillett is a survivor of sexual assault, and she says unless you've been a victim, you can't understand the trauma of rape.
Victims of sexual assault process the trauma differently and oftentimes in their own way. I mean, it's almost like we don't really understand what rape does to people. Your whole life is recalibrated. Your whole sense of trust, your judgment, your relationship to your sexuality, your relationship to your body, your relationship to the word no. And yet, the way in which people think that rape victims are supposed to not only just move on, but somehow have the fortitude to hold someone accountable by going through the judicial system, which is not a friendly place to many people who come forward, it's like mind-blowing. Like, people do not seem to understand the despair that many rape victims find themselves in.
So far, the judge may permit only one other victim to testify, but that may be enough for the prosecution to outline a pattern of behavior from Cosby.
I represent 33 accusers of Bill Cosby.
Gloria Allred's a celebrity attorney. She's represented high-profile clients, including the family of Nicole Brown Simpson, one of Tiger Woods' mistresses, and Melanie Brown, formerly of the Spice Girls, who wanted to establish Eddie Murphy as the father of her child. Of all the accusers represented by Allred, only one has been permitted to testify against Cosby. She's referred to as victim number six.
The woman I represent, prior victim number six, you know, she's never filed a civil lawsuit. There's no economic benefit here. She's doing this because if she's subpoenaed, she'll be doing her duty.
Allred said she didn't know why victim number six was chosen. But after decades of allegations and denials, Cosby will face Andrea Constant and victim number six in a court of law.
I feel that both Andrea and victim number six are extremely courageous to be willing to testify in this case, because the cross-examination by the defense is going to be very brutal. Because, as usual, the defense will always try to put any person who claims she is a victim on trial and, you know, try to distract from the fact that they represent a man who is the actual defendant who is on trial.
Credibility is key in cases of sexual assault, says Deborah Turkheimer.
The jury really does have to believe her. And so what the defense, I expect, will do is attack it on a number of fronts. The two knew one another, and so there was a relationship that could give rise to some sort of motive to lie. I expect that this will be a part of the defense. Maybe there was a reason to enact revenge on Cosby. Maybe she wanted money. She did wait about a year to report to police, and the argument will be that this is inconsistent with the behavior of a sexual assault victim. She returned to Cosby's house a few months after the incident in question, and then went apparently to see a show that he was performing in with her parents. And there, too, the defense, I expect, will argue that this is not how a sexual assault victim behaves.
She says the prosecution will make the case that sexual assault victims often know and have a relationship with their attackers, that no physical force needs to take place, and that victims often wait to report their assaults.
Sexual assault victims have many reasons to be reluctant about moving forward with a criminal case. But in this instance, Cosby's fame may have been an added deterrent.
Again, Salamisha Tillett.
Bill Cosby's script, so to speak, was about mentoring and tutoring, helping young women break into an industry. And he's a very powerful man. So that doesn't mean that you are going to assume that you have to sleep with the person. But he's Bill Cosby. I guess what I'm saying is, like, how does mentoring work? Like, that's actually how it works. Like, if someone has, like, a position of power and you're interested in getting into their industry, you're more than likely to hang out with them, want to get to know them. You're definitely not expecting them to drug you.
We reached out to Bill Cosby's lawyers. They denied our request for an interview. But the comedian recently broke his silence after 2 years in an interview with Michael Smirkanish on a Sirius XM radio show.
None of the conversation from you discusses the upcoming trial.
No, that's not something that any smart person would want to do.
Do you expect to testify on your own behalf at that trial?
No, I do not.
Are you at liberty to discuss any of the allegations that are pending against you?
No, I am not.
Turkheimer says the timing of Cosby speaking out is no accident, especially since the trial begins on June 5th.
This seems to be part of an effort to change the optics so that Cosby is the victim of this public rush to judgment. I think the hope is that if public opinion shifts outside the courtroom, that percolates into the courtroom.
A jury will decide whether Cosby is guilty or not of sexually assaulting Andrea Constant. But we asked nearly everyone we spoke with, what's justice? Salamisha Tillett.
I think with the Cosby case, one thing that's kind of come out of it, for those who want to or feel like they can get a sense of justice of sorts, extending the statute of limitations on sexual assault.
Gloria Allred.
I hope there'll be justice, but not just justice for Mr. Cosby, but justice for the persons who allege they are victims of Mr. Cosby.
Michael Eric Dyson.
At the end of the day, Bill Cosby is an extraordinary genius who may also be a morally reprehensible human being who engaged in potentially illegal and certainly immoral behavior. But that's Thomas Jefferson. That's many of the founding fathers who owned slaves. That's men who mistreat women constantly and who should be held to account, by the way. And we are living with the complicated result of acknowledging his genius while also having to confront the moral and ethical erosion and depravity that may be his fate as well.
For complete coverage of the Cosby trial, go to newsworks.org and subscribe to Cosby Unraveled wherever you get your podcasts. Special thanks to Danny Miller, Paige Flager, Bobby Allen, and Dr. James Peterson at WHYY. And special thanks also to Michael Smirkanish. The music on the show was created by Tony Trove and Mike Phoebus. Brett Rader saved our lives with editing help at Crunch Time. Shout out to Mixmaster Charlie Kyer and engineers Diana Martinez and Bob, don't forget the S, Alls. The show was produced by Lindsay Lazarski and Jeanette Woods. Sandra Clark is Vice President of News and Civic Dialogue. I'm Annette John Hall. Thanks for listening.